This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training, and this paper is entitled, Who Really Chooses a Lab Service? This was written in November of 2009. As long as commercial and hospital outreach labs have opened their doors for business, field reps have struggled with navigating the labyrinth within prospective clients to arrive at that sweet statement, we're going to start using your lab. To answer who makes the lab choice, we need to first state the obvious. People and organizations they work in are not clones. We all act and think differently. There's a term called organizational culture. Google's culture lives very differently from Hewlett-Packard's, just as Quest's contrasts with the culture at LabCorp. The same holds true within doctor's offices as well as hospital settings. Let's step back for a minute. In addition to the various cultures mentioned above, salespeople often overlook the psychological and emotional factors that figure strongly in choosing a lab service. By failing to understand these less tangible aspects, a lab sales rep can often miss opportunities without appreciating why. On the other side of the coin, those representatives who pay attention to the human factors create a higher percentage of sales. Within each prospect sits two fundamental decision-making components. One, individuals who have their own agenda, a powerful consideration. And two, group dynamics, people who think in terms of the whole situation and the betterment of the organization. Consequently, salespeople need to be attentive to both entities. For this combination to be practical, the seller of lab services must answer three key questions. Question number one, who and how? Little else drives an excellent strategy more than fully understanding who lives inside the buying center and awareness of how the client makes decisions. When a sales or lab manager discusses the prospective client pipeline with their field person, this inquiry of who and how must sit atop of the list. If the field rep makes simple assumptions about either category, the account strategy places itself precariously on sand. Errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. In each sale, there rests a buying center. As individuals, we typically exist as our own buying center when it pertains to small, simple purchases. For example, we don't usually consult with our spouse, friend, or parent when we want to buy a toothbrush or a magazine. The primary reason distills down to a less conscious feeling about value. However, there exhibits a major difference when someone considers a larger purchase, in this case, using a laboratory. Value, convenience, political ties, and patient care become dominant drivers. Various people discuss the merits or demerits of selecting a primary lab service. But who are these various people? Let's take a more granular peek into this mysterious world of who. The decider. He or she either makes the final decision or anoints another individual to do so. Frequently, the employer, maybe the doctor or the administration, can state yes when everyone else says no, and vice versa. The decider frequently receives feedback from other influencers and gives the final verdict. If the practice consists of a group of doctors, there's usually one who sits a little more equal than everyone else. Salespeople get lulled into the excuse, oh, it's a group decision to choose a lab. While selling each member of the group is essential, representatives must be cognizant that one of those constituents holds more decision-making authority than the rest. While on the subject of power, several things need underscoring. First, power, quote-unquote, subsists invisibly. No one walks around with a sign around his neck stating decision maker. This observation necessitates the salesperson to triangulate opinions from various staff members as to the individual who holds the final decision making capabilities. It may seem trite to say, but worth highlighting. Clients do not make decisions. People do. Salespeople should avoid the generalized statement, "The client decided to use a different lab." No, one person decided, maybe with possible input from others, on a certain lab. Laboratory upper management should be astute about this and follow up with two agendas. One is to inquire further into the details, and secondly, provide better training for their representative. The second point demonstrates that decision-making may not always correlate perfectly with organizational rank. A lower-salaried phlebotomist or send-out clerk in a hospital could hold, potentially, especially strong dynamic influence. Therefore, from the very first meeting, a salesperson needs to start asking not only about needs, but also investigating political dominance. With such information at hand, the rep can zero in where to allocate his or her time. The final comment about say-so revolves around the term expert power. In a doctor's office, for example, a physician may be in a position to veto a positive vote by others due to medical knowledge. It may be surrounding methodologies, maybe a report format, normal values, maybe panic values, test availability, turnaround time on certain tests, and so forth. Staff associates acquiesce to this expertise, despite the disappointment that a certain benefit may improve something for them personally. The champion. Some refer to this person as the coach or the advocate. Regardless of the title, he or she exists in every major sale. The champion guides the representative by offering information that helps in managing the sales process. He or she typically doesn't perform the selling duties. They simply assist the representative with important information. One has to uncover and, more importantly, develop a champion. This evolves by having meaningful dialogue with various people within the customer's domain. It may take significant time to expose and cultivate a champion, so field reps need to practice patience, remain visible, and have purposeful visits. In other words, minimize or eliminate the howdy calls. There are three criteria for a good champion. One is the rep has credibility with that person. It may be that the coach has known the salesperson from a different situation and now carries the same level of trust to this new location. Alternately, over time, the marketer has plainly developed a sense of trust and credibility, allowing the champion to feel good about their relationship. Secondly, the champion has credibility within the account. Once the marketer has found a coach, he has to be sure this individual holds credibility within the client's domain. Nothing signifies a poor strategy than aligning oneself with someone who lies culturally misaligned or presents a negative attitude within the account. When this happens, the representative possesses what some attribute as, quote, negative power, end quote. Other staff members may become automatically against the seller simply because the coach equates to someone other staff members don't particularly like. The third criteria for a good champion is they want to see the representative succeed. This person feels that it stands in their best interest to have your lab do business with the account. Within the selling laboratory itself may reside a champion. If another employee previously covered the account or has had many years of experience interacting with the client, a salesperson can gain some good background information. But rarely does it equate to the personal interaction garnered by physically talking to client personnel. There is no substitute for personal chemistry and relationship building. A field rep may not be fortunate enough to find someone within the client's kingdom who fulfills all three criteria. However, whenever those three standards suggest that someone might be developed into a champion, it acts as a good idea to test that individual's potential usefulness by asking for coaching. The users. This component of the who covers an expansive and politically diverse range. Within a hospital referral testing setting, there's someone who prepares the specimens, performs login duties, handles results and communicates with a reference lab. Certainly a significant user indeed. Obviously, physicians fall under the user category. Within a doctor's office environment, besides the doctor, front desk staff, nurses, nurse practitioners, medical assistants, phlebotomists, and billing personnel can all absorb relative duties involving a lab service. Each one thinks about how the lab affects his or her job. Everyone has their own agenda, so the salesperson needs to ferret out those details. The staff's personal success may be at stake. Thus, the marketer has to consider subjectivity when selling to each one. Client personnel ask themselves, "How will your lab service work for me?" Of course, a compelling question endures. What kind of influence does each user possess? Does the phlebotomist exert strong impact on the decision maker? Does the office manager rule the roost? Or maybe the billing clerk can autonomously swing certain work to a different lab. This degree of cloud investigation requires deft conversations with several people. By nature, individuals want to feel important and may superficially express their so-called power. Careful opinion corroboration, if possible, is the best policy. The administrator. Within a doctor's scenario, the administrator typically associates with the title office manager. In a hospital environment, it may equate to the vice president who oversees the lab. The hospital laboratory director or manager also acts within this term. Doctors' office administrators frequently become the target of lab sales representatives because this person commonly exerts a great deal of influence in the lab selection, or they may even dictate it. In fact, field people characteristically develop their strongest rapports with the office administrator. That may equate to a good strategy, but failing to cultivate a strong unity with the decision maker, if other than the office manager, and other influencers could evolve into an uncomfortable and awkward client-rep-lab relationship. How? How the decision process works within a prospect is one of the most overlooked strategy components. Top salespeople, however, know very well this critical component of strategy setting. Distinction lies between two words, how and why. Where strong emotion and politics enter the picture, both words tend to coalesce. Within a democratic office scenario, the decision maker will absorb other people's opinions. Obviously, some people's vote may count more than others may. That explains why deciphering influence persists as an important task for the salesperson. Let's look at common client responses about the lab decision process. For a physician's office, the answers just splatter all over the canvas. "I don't know. The office was using this lab when I came here." It's a group decision. The doctor decides and then informs the staff. The office manager reviews the information and discusses it with the doctor. "Our phlebotomist uses the lab she feels most comfortable with. Our lab is hooked up with our EMR system." "Oh, it's all based on insurance. The insurance companies make the decision for us." The office manager decides and informs the providers. "It's political. The hospital owns the practice and they mandate the hospital lab. We leave it up to the patients, wherever they feel most comfortable for their blood draws and depending on what insurance they have. XYZ Labs Patient Service Center services the building. It's so convenient. It's our need of stats. ABC Lab gives us that service. The local lab employs the doctor's wife. There's a certain obligation. The doctor knows the pathologist from the medical school." 2 points bear repeating. One is separate the how from the why, and two, uncover the decision-making process. This will create a more effective strategy and provide direction to resource allocation. Now we go to question number two. What do they want? Comprehending motivation accurately serves as one of the easiest things to do poorly and one of the most difficult to do well. Many salespeople struggle with trying to figure out what another person wants and will do. One thing remains constant. Everyone acts and thinks selfishly first, and then may think about the more corporate good. Those, quote, buyers in the healthcare industry who become involved in lab services departmentalize their individual wishes and potential benefits into four overarching areas. One is operational, another is financial, a third is strategic, and fourth is political. The salesperson plays a significant role in delineating how his or her lab service benefits the customer by segregating the lab's strengths and basic differences into one or more of those buckets. Incorporating into this conversation weave statements concerning personal wins, or hot buttons. For one individual, it may translate into an operational benefit. For instance, it's easier to use. Within the same customer, the solution may render a financial win for the doctor or his patients. For another person, a political gain may appear as the most positive aspect. Bottom line, it behooves the field rep to ask appropriate points about individual wants in a lab service that may be over and above what the person currently receives or doesn't. Question number three. How does the client perceive the incumbent and the selling lab? Even Keel describes the mode of most people when asked how they perceive their current lab service. The reason distills down to the force of human nature. People will stay with something if the product or service does pretty much what they expect it to do. As humans, we don't like change. It stands as an important duty to interrogate as many people as possible to unearth various opinions about the current lab service. Just because the office manager says everything is just fine with the lab doesn't translate into a corporate unified agreement. The doctor may be sitting in his office fuming about a report that doesn't fit a patient's clinical picture. A front desk employee may be sitting on hold for the billing department waiting to handle a patient's billing issue. Appreciating everyone's perception of the incumbent lab marks a conspicuous strategic component. A simple discussion could begin, what position does your lab hold in your mind? Gold standard? It's just okay? Or I'm looking to make a change? The majority of people will say the lab is okay, allowing for deft probing by the representative to discover latent issues. The final decision maker abides as the most important person to understand how he or she feels about the selling laboratory. This point, unfortunately, escapes many field personnel due to the fact that they naturally tend to focus their attention on receptivity and ease of seeing as opposed to focusing on power, i.e. the decision maker. If someone regards the selling lab and/or the representative as ho-hum, he or she commonly devises a perfunctory response or may avert describing honest feelings altogether. Nevertheless, it stands as an important strategic component to ask, how do you perceive my lab? Should there be a positive response, the seller sits in a much better position and can always use the statement as a reminder in future conversations. Summary. As initially stated, there is no single answer as to who really chooses a lab service. Is it the doctor? Office manager? Maybe the send-out person? Nurse? Nurse practitioner? Administrative vice president? There always exists a, quote, buying center. But the question remains, who lives within it? The salesperson must excavate each account thoroughly, uncovering the final decision maker, a champion, an administrator, and all of the users. Who in the account plays these roles, and what kind of influence does each one have? Is it low, medium, or high? Understanding each person's wants resides as an important strategic component, as does each one's perception of the incumbent lab and the selling lab. Deciphering the how from the why about lab decisions extends into another distinct strategic element. When a lab representative has all of this knowledge within his quiver, his arrows fly far more accurately toward the correct bullseye of choices. This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training, and I hope you have found this paper on Who Really Chooses a Lab Service to be informative. For more information, you can log on to www.clinlabsales.com.